much more fallout nationally, centering now on Ohio. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy, and along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
It's nice to be back with you again on this beautiful Sunday night when we're doing some recording, and we've got a lot of interesting things to get through, so we'll be doing those through the week while I'm actually on a business trip.
That's right. We're going to be, as they say, paying it forward, ladies and gentlemen. We're paying it forward this week. But, Chuck, it's interesting. I had mentioned on an earlier program about an earlier program that we had done on the issues surrounding Missouri Congressman Todd Akin, and we went back and took a look and realized we had talked about doing the program but never did the program. So, ladies and gentlemen, I call this our mea culpa. We are going to do the program today regarding the controversy surrounding Missouri Congressman and Senate, U.S. Senate candidate Todd Akin. As many of you may be aware, Congressman Akin is on the campaign trail running against Democrat incumbent Senator Claire McCaskill from Missouri. And during his campaign, he was asked some questions about his pro-life positions. Now, Chuck, you know, just for the purposes of total clarification, Representative Todd Akin is also an elder in the Presbyterian Church in America, the denomination in which I also serve as an elder. And so I would expect, at least hope, that Congressman Akin would be very pro-life, as is the case with a large majority of the Presbyterian elders in our denomination, and I know in your denomination as well. But in an interview, Representative Akin was asked about the issue of the hard topic of rape and incest and whether or not that abortion should be okay for that tragic circumstance. Well, Congressman Akin got himself in a lot of hot water by his, well, let's say, less than artful speaking back in response to the question. It wasn't that what he said was inaccurate, and I think we're going to talk about that a little bit more, Chuck, but it was just said in such a way, and it was transmitted in such a way that it left people wondering, first of all, what he was saying, and then, of course, when there's a vacuum like that, your political opponents are the first to jump in to try to fill the void to help people understand what you were really trying to say. And I think that's what happened to Congressman Akin here. He misspoke himself. As a member of the U.S. House Health Committee and Health and Science and Technology Committee, he has been at the forefront of these type of issues now for the last decade or more. And I think what he was trying to do inartfully, sadly enough, was to actually kind of condense all of the information that he had heard over years, not being a medical professional himself, from medical professionals that he heard over the years in committee hearings and things of that nature, and tried to basically thumbnail it into a 30-second response with some very, very bad consequences coming from it.
Well, let's face it. What he was really trying to do was smooth out a position that pro-lifers are attempting to take without answering the question in a really confrontational manner, if you will.
Okay.
And that's the question about the rape or incest question. What he probably should have said was, why would you apply the death penalty to one of the victims?
And that's really the best answer to come at in this respect, because that's the whole issue. The media tries to elicit emotional responses by painting this tragic circumstance for the woman, but not caring about the, well, even more tragic circumstance for the unborn child, which is the death penalty of being butchered because of the consequence of its conception.
Yeah. This is a difficult area, Barry, because this particular discussion raises a lot of emotional issues.
Yes, it does.
Yes. Is it horrible that a woman should be raped? Yes. Is it horrible that children have to suffer through incest? Yes. And there is some kind of an idea that they would ease the burden by being allowed to murder the result of that particular form of relations that is biblically forbidden. And of course, the woman in both cases, the female, is not at fault. There's nothing she could do if she was overpowered, either psychologically or physically, She is at fault, not at all. We've all heard the things about she dressed provocatively, she did this, she did that. No, that, I'm sorry, guys, that doesn't count. If you feel so overwhelmed, then you need to get married and have relations with your wife on a regular basis, because that just simply doesn't cut it. Now, again, why should one crime lead to another? How does two wrongs make a right? And the answer is, it does not.
And it never does.
That's right. And politicians don't want to answer that way because they know they're going to get pilloried in the press. Well, the problem is that because they don't answer honestly, they get pilloried in the press anyway. And you end up saying dumb things, trying to avoid saying something that will get you pilloried in the press. You say something stupid and you get pilloried anyway.
And actually you get even worse, as Todd Akin has found out since his comments.
It's being turned into him saying this, that, another thing. And the fact is that that's not fair. It's not fair at all. All you have to do is listen to Joe Biden, almost any speech he's given since, not just since he's been vice president, but before. And it's a gaffe fest. I mean, the guy basically almost can't communicate.
Well, and unless he plagiarizes from somebody else.
Well, and a lot of people, Barry, have forgotten that he ran for president, I think, in 1988.
88, yes.
In 88, and basically he had to withdraw because it was discovered that he was plagiarizing speeches directly from the leader of the British Liberal Party.
Yes.
And, I mean, not just picking little bits and pieces out, I mean word for word.
Yes, large sections of speeches that he was claiming as his own. But that gets right around to, we've got a situation in this country where abortion is a major hot-button issue. It's always going to come up during campaigns, and it's always going to be treated in such a way that nobody really wants to get to the actual baseline discussions regarding the reasons, the excuses, and the consequences of an abortion culture. However, like I said, I think Representative Akin, in his honest but inartful manner, tried to do that with what he was saying. And it, like I said, it blew up in his face to the point where 24 hours later, and this is where Ohio starts coming in, Chuck, Congressman Akin was sitting in a studio in Delaware County at the offices of the Strategy Group for Media, which is an Ohio-based national political consulting firm, cutting a response commercial where he apologized for the comments and how they were perceived or taken by people, reiterating his concern for women and his concern that also that he's unapologetically pro-life and 100% for the baby as well. And that was one of the first linkages to Ohio for this particular scenario. Now, a lot of our listeners also know Ohio is no stranger to the abortion politics debate, as we're dealing with a number of pieces of legislation now, including the heartbeat bill, House Bill 125, which is still sitting in the Senate Health Committee. Now it's been a little over a year since that bill was assigned to that committee, and they're still trying to debate it, although we may have some good news for folks later on in a future program about that piece of legislation. There have been some backdoor inside movements going on that we'll talk about later that we just can't fully disclose right at the moment. So,
right.
But that brings us around to our next Ohio connection on the Todd Akin map, because just Saturday, I believe this was Saturday, or no, it was Friday. On Friday, an Associated Press string writer by the name of Julie Carr Smythe, who I'm no stranger to, she did hit pieces on the pro-marriage folks back in the 2004 run-up to the marriage amendment, is now decided to do a hit piece on who is known as the grandfather of the pro-life movement, Dr. Jack Wilkie of Cincinnati. Now, Dr. Wilkie, I know him personally. We serve on boards together. Jack Wilkie's a great man. Jack Wilkie's also in his 90s now, and he is still very articulate for a man in his 90th year of life in defending the defenseless unborn. But according to Julie Carr Smythe, this man's a quack, according to her article. And this article comes out of CNSnews.com, Dateline August 24th by Julie Carr Smythe, saying Ohio doctor helps perpetuate rape pregnancy ideas. And this is where we get down to it, Chuck. This is where Julie Carr Smythe shows why journalism is in sore need of ethics training.
Well, look, journalism and ethics are virtually mutually exclusive. I don't say that lightly. I've been interviewed by people who things that I said were put in quotes, And I didn't say anything like that. So very often journalists will hear you say one thing, interpret it as another, and write down what they interpreted. And that can be put down to honest worldview bias. What's going on here is this is an attempt at character assassination.
Absolutely.
This is not a mistake. This is not a mere worldview bias. This is a complete, deliberate, calculated bias against Jack Wilkie. And basically, she is quoting something he said 13 years ago as his current opinion. Now, do I know whether or not Jack Wilkie, who is an MD, continues to believe this thing? I honestly don't know, Barry. I think maybe if he does, he's being disabused of it, maybe at this very moment. But the fact is that Wilkie basically wrote, oh gosh, in a paper in 1999, that the biological reaction that happens from the stress of a woman being raped can be a protection against becoming pregnant.
And those were the thoughts that Todd Akin was so inartfully trying to capsulize and summarize when he was doing his interview.
Well, here's the problem, Barry. When you cut a piece of that out like that, as Smythe has done, and as a number of people have done when they read these papers, sometimes these things are written in scientific ease, and those little snippets get taken out and taken out of context, and suddenly they turn into other things. That's what happens when you, for instance, we all know the old story about you can make the Bible say anything. Judas hanged himself, go and do likewise, and what you do, do quickly.
Yes.
You've quoted now three different parts of the Bible. Well, it says the Bible says you should go out and commit suicide. Well, obviously not. Now, does Wilkie actually believe this? Well, is there a connection between stress and becoming pregnant? Well, yeah, but I don't think it reduces it that much. And I think biologically, it's discredited that that much stress can have that much effect on whether a sperm meets egg. And the fact is that what Wilkie knows and what everybody who knows anything about pregnancy and how it works knows, there's a very short window between ovulation and the period where you can get pregnant. And it's between 4 and 8 days.
Mm-hmm, right.
So the odds are very short, are very long, actually, about unless she is raped inside that window, which means that she's got maybe a 15 to 25% chance. If the person who's the sperm is healthy, if her egg is healthy, if the conditions are correct, there are any number of things. So what he was saying was there's kind of a built-in protection. But let's face it, it happens, Barry.
Yes,
there
yes.
are people out there who are the children. There is someone I'm friends with on Facebook who does presentations. She is the child of rape whose mother attempted to abort her.
Yes.
So this happens. And to attempt this form of defense and saying why you shouldn't put a rape and incest exception in a law. And that's what's really going on here. Smythe is basically plowing the ground so that they can basically make Wilkie look like a quack the next time he wants to testify in front of the legislature on a partial birth abortion or a full abortion ban or something like that. They're basically trying to discredit him at this point. And they also want to discredit Akin as someone who's following someone whose ideas have been discredited, because he shouldn't sit in the legislature if he believes this. Well, nonsense. I mean, okay, I think we're going to go into this tomorrow because we're running short on time.
Sure.
But let's take a look at the Democratic Party platform. They want no restrictions on abortion at all.
No, not at all.
And Barry, I think you and I know that that particular outlook is what this Smythe is going for.
And it doesn't hurt the case against her when the main person she quotes is not Jack Wilkie. It's liberal attorney and gadfly Alphonse Gerhardstein, also from Cincinnati, who basically is crying the blues because Jack Wilkie is respected by legislators. And basically in saying that, and this is from Julie Kerr-Smythe's article, says, still, the last time Wilkie appeared at the Ohio State House, GOP lawmakers were, quote, almost worshipful, unquote, recalled Cincinnati attorney Al Gerhardstein, an abortion rights proponent who has often debated Wilkie. And now this is a quote from Gerhardstein. Quote, he's always been a very sincere, passionate advocate for his cause, and I've always been wary that he doesn't let the facts get in the way, unquote. Well, Chuck, I'm just going to state from personal experience, I've heard Jack Wilkie testify, and I've heard Al Gerhardstein testify, and if I were going to say which one didn't let facts get in the way, it wouldn't be Jack Wilkie.
And with that, we're out of time for today. We're going to pick this discussion up again tomorrow. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.